straight up on Tuesday. That means it's time to talk football. Yep, in 30 minutes, we'll have another pair of Red Sox-Cubs tickets to give away. But joining us now, Patriots insider from NBC Sports Boston. He's with us each and every Tuesday, Tommy Curran with Gresh and Fourier. Tommy, good afternoon.
What is up, my friends? You having a good draft week so far?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we're heading out there, and we just heard that there could be some weather in Cleveland tonight, which could make some things pretty interesting for us in terms of shrinking the broadcast. But by God, that's not what we are here to talk about. I know there's a lot swirling around the Patriots. There's a lot of rumors, a lot of innuendo, things like that. But, Tommy, I want to start with the actual draft. Do you really think by, draft night, 2 days, 7 hours, and 58 minutes to be exact, that someone elsewhere in the National Football League will call the New England Patriots and give them a deal they can't refuse? Does that happen in the next 2 days?
I think that the deal would have to be exorbitant and unprecedented for the Patriots to consider trading down. Does that happen? I can't get into the minds of the Raiders or the Vikings or the Broncos, but I can tell you that the expectation is so highly set that I would say that the chance of it happening is remote.
So with all the hullabaloo that we've been dealing with this number three pick, really since December, I would say, I think people are really focused in on this draft, knowing that it was going to be a top five pick. I just saw your poll, let's keep it simple. Is it just going to be Drake May?
I would think that is the most likely scenario. I would say without reservation, Christian, that the greatest by far likelihood is that they sit there at number three and take a quarterback. If it ends up being Jaden Daniels because Washington takes Drake May, I think it would be Jaden Daniels. If Drake May is there, I think it's Drake May. So, they don't have the choice between May and Daniels, it seems. They would have a choice between McCarthy and May, but my feeling is that they would lean towards May. Just based on the upside, based on everything that has been said about upside and the belief that you want to bet on the talent and your own coaching staff to bring it out. So I think that the most likely scenario is Drake May.
Tommy, if there was, I don't know, I know trades are enticing. I get that. But I know that it's the whole, hey, we're open for business. Is that just trying to play both sides of the fence? Or do you think there is an element that maybe some in Foxborough aren't 100% completely sold on taking that quarterback at number three? Is that just business is done, or an indicator that maybe they don't love the top of the draft?
Yeah, and that's a good conversation. I had it with Felger. Florio has brought it up. And I'd say this. I wonder what your reaction is as well, but I think that saying we're open for business will entertain offers for a trade down doesn't necessarily mean that you are not in love with the quarterbacks who are there. You're just trying to extract an opportunity to say, love these guys, but can someone make our entire roster better at other positions and we can still get a quarterback we kind of love? Maybe you love Penix less, but you get such an exorbitant amount, like a starting left tackle or a high-end wide receiver, in addition to multiple first-round picks, and you say, man, really love May, but this makes us so good at so many different spots. So I think that you're not necessarily out, so to speak, or have reservations, so to speak, about any of these quarterbacks. But I do think very much that Elliott Wolf sitting there last Thursday and making the statements he did about trading down was an exercise in, hey, last call over here. Who's coming up? Anybody? Anybody? Because, he is an interim. He does not have the job yet. So it would be, I think, malpractice if you're in that spot and don't play it the way an aggressive young GM should.
So we're talking to Tom E. Curran. And with that, I'm assuming that you saw the Diana Rossini tweet from yesterday, just in case you people listening right now have it. I'm just going to read it. The New England Patriots are listening and taking calls from teams looking to move into three. While Elliott Wolf is running point, I'm told Patriots president Jonathan Kraft is heavily involved in the decision-making. I'm just curious your thoughts on that particular tweet at this particular time involving Jonathan Kraft and how involved he is. I'm critical of it because I'm just curious to why that tweet identifying Jonathan at this point in time.
I think it's an ongoing perception that is being fed that Jonathan Kraft continues to be looked at as the man behind the curtain who is running things. And I'd say this, from calls I made yesterday and information I got, nothing has moved up to the level of having a conversation about any trade offers. So heavily involved in what? Nothing has risen to that level. And I think it's dubious to think that, just think about the implausibility of Jonathan Kraft pushing a quarterback on his new personnel department, or Robert Kraft, and his new coaching staff saying, you know what, we're taking May here. And then expecting that group, if they had reservations about it, to succeed or to go along. Would that be the right way to approach it? So I just think it's implausible when they've said publicly so many times, we're going to hold our football people accountable and they'll make the football decisions.
I wish I could get behind that more, Tommy, if the GM wasn't an interim guy who could mm-hmm. just be shoved out, because we actually saw last year new owner syndrome, and I think there's a little bit of that going on of the we get to ride the roller coaster now because Bill's gone, that David Tepper did that arguably in Carolina last year on the whole, oh no, this is the guy I want type thing. And with new people, because I don't think Gerard Mayo's now, I mean, I'm sure he'll be heard, but are these guys going to jump on the table if the owner has a lean one way or the other? And RKK saying I'd love to get a top flight quarterback at the owner's meetings. It feels like maybe the orders aren't given, but they're sure as hell implied.
Oh, I think that they absolutely would be numb to not understand what the Crafts would like to see for their franchise and their business, the marketability of young players, a hood ornament for your franchise. But, you know, I think that the we factor for ownership should have been dulled by now after 30 years, 31 years as owners, and seeing, look, we're not equipped. We are not equipped to make these picks. They're talking to the coaches, the offensive coordinators, the quarterbacks, coaches, the trainers, the families. They have more information than we do. I think David Tepper's we factor, for instance, as you mentioned, might be different at the very, very top of the draft. But I think with the Crafts, I think that they understand, hey, we can be passionate about it. We can know what we're looking at, but we are by no means experts. The best way to submarine this team, which has gone, you know, since 2018 with no playoff wins, one Pro Bowler in the last however many years, is to get out of the way and let the people do their jobs. And I think that, you know, they state it publicly, they state it privately. We're not going to force on people, but we will hold them accountable. So I just, it's absolutely a perception and a narrative that's not going to go away. It was born in the 90s after Bill Parcells left and Pete Carroll came in, and it's embedded. So it's not going away. I just think it's, somebody needs a villain, and they are fitting the bill right now.
So, Tom, do you think it's fair to say that the hay is in the barn now for this team, for this organization, as far as what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and who they want?
I would hope so, right?
Yeah, I would hope so, too.
Meeting. They haven't had their last meeting yet, according to Wolf, last Thursday. I would imagine the hay should be in the barn with every single war game scenario that you could have going into this draft to role play. What happens if Minnesota comes up? What happens if Denver comes up? What happens if, you know, the Raiders want to send us Davante Adams and picks? What do we do? So I would imagine they've gamed all those scenarios and they have the player that they want in mind. There shouldn't be any rock kicking. There should be consensus by now. I'd love to know how aggressive they'll be in the trade market, though. you know, Ayuk out there, A.J. Brown out there. The Patriots, as I've reported and stated, are anxious and hopeful to make a trade for a wide receiver. They kicked the tires on A.J. Brown, as Albert Breer said last week. He'd be the most likely guy because of the affordability of his contract. Ayuk continues to be a player that, you know, is targeted, I think, around the league, T. Higgins. I think that they would be busy during this draft to try and extract whatever position they're not able to address. And X receiver is the number one spot.
When do they start signing some of these defensive guys? After the draft? Because if you look at kind of a 2 or 3 year window, I know the offense needs addressing. You mentioned wide receiver. Looks like they're definitely going quarterback in number three. When do they start to spend a little dough to try to pick off some of these defensive guys early and not get to the end of next year where you have pretty much your whole front seven, it feels like, heading into free agency?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it would be dependent upon whether they do make a trade and how much cap space they have remaining after the draft ends. You know, going into training camp, I think, would be more likely to, Gresh. You know, that's when I think a lot of things start to get done in June and July. So that might be premature. But again, I don't know where they are. But I would imagine all focus right now is draft-related and undrafted free agent-related. So they're probably pretty buried with that stuff right now.
So I saw the story about Robert Kraft and his bid to be in the Hall of Fame and how it's not looking very good because he's doing too much campaigning. And I kind of chuckled because I was like, isn't every single owner and every single player in a way campaigning and politicking to be voted in? Isn't that kind of the way it works? So why would they hold it against Kraft if he's doing the same thing, if it's even true, if he's doing the same thing every other owner and every other player was doing?
I don't know why. And I don't know what goes through the Hall of Fame voters' minds in terms of timing and how many contributors go in. And to me, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. And nothing to me is more heartbreaking than, and I'm not saying that this would be the case with Kraft, but seeing guys posthumously inducted into the Hall of Fame is one of the saddest things you can imagine. It wasn't Stabler posthumously inducted just recently. I think Pat Bowlen might have been. But it's just, you know, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. And if Jerry Jones is in and Robert Kraft isn't, to me, that's just mind-blowing based upon them coming in at generally the same time. And I don't think that the Cowboys have done really enough since 1995 in the last 30 years to propel Jerry Jones to a plateau that Robert Kraft isn't on. But I don't know how often Kraft falls asleep worrying about the Hall of Fame anymore. I would imagine at some point he's probably gotten his head around it, that this hasn't gone the way I expected it to, and maybe just think of the unrequited love that's gone on so far. But I think we would all agree he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. How much politicking you can do at this point, I don't know. I mean, I do know the Dynasty book. The book was certainly, I think, Robert Kraft embracing an idea that, hey, this is an opportunity for me to articulate the things as I saw them and the things that we did, all of us, but certainly his own version of, these are the things that we did to get this team from where it was to where it has gotten. And I'm going to take this opportunity. So if that was a vanity project to some extent, I think that that served its purpose. I don't think that the Dynasty series necessarily was the same vanity project for Robert. And it certainly hasn't turned into one in the after.
If anything, it's blown up on him, for crying out loud.
This hasn't worked at all.
Pretty amazing stuff. Tommy, thanks, man. We appreciate it. We'll catch you next week to talk about a full draft class, finally.
All right. Travel safe, guys.